You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so delighted to be back. We want to thank our co-host, guest, who stepped in for us last week, Tom Swearingen, award-winning poet, with his special guest, Mickey Furman, who sang Happy Birthday to My Mom.
She did.
That was so cool.
Last
week's show. And if you missed it, you can pick up. That was episode 67. And you can find it now on all streaming platforms, podcast platforms. Just go looking for Rendezvous with a Writer, and you'll find us everywhere.
Yeah,
LA
almost.
Talk Radio and Spotify and iHeart and you name it, we're there. So we are delighted to be back and kicking off 2024. Yeah.
Okay, special guest tonight, Henry Park of True West Magazine. Hi, Henry.
Hey, Henry.
How's it going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Love that shirt.
Thank you. I'm very proud of it.
Looks pretty good, doesn't it?
I didn't make it. I just love it.
Yeah. Looks great. It looks great.
And our special author tonight, Mike Toriano.
Yeah, there's Mike.
Howdy, howdy.
Mike. Howdy, howdy.
It's good to be with you again, Jim.
It is. And you've had a lot happen in a year, and we're going to hear little details all about that. But then we're going to get started. And Mike, you just stay right along with us. And you have something to share with Henry. You just jump right in there. Henry, what's going on?
Oh, not much. Just sitting around reading True West. And I love it.
Yeah, we all got it.
By golly, if you turn to page, I don't even know what page it is. Here,
we have it.
I got
page 78.
Yeah,
you can start reading all about the best Western films and TV shows of the year, Westerns. And it was the major trend this year has been diversity, both in fact and fiction. And that's what I look at in the article. And also coming up in True West, can you believe this year is the 50th anniversary of Blazing Saddles.
Oh my goodness.
I just had it makes me feel that way. I just had a wonderful interview with screenwriter Andrew Bergman, who thought of it in the first place when it was then called Tex X, and then collaborated with Mel Brooks on the script. He later wrote and directed The In-Laws, So Fine, The Freshman, Honeymoon in Vegas. He's a great talent, terribly funny. As far as what else is happening in the Western world, as you know, the film and TV business winds down around Halloween and doesn't perk up until New Year, which is like 3 days ago. So there isn't a ton of news. So I wanted to mention some new Western films that are out there and well worth seeing. Among Wolves, which you can rent on Amazon Prime, is about a couple of women who are working with the priest, supporting minors who are trying to unionize. When the women witness a murder, they have to take it on the lam and appeal to two very tough men to take them to safety. It's written and directed by Jason Lee, who is a very talented filmmaker, and he's directed several Westerns, Apache Junction, Any Bullet Will Do. And he writes characters so appealingly to actors that despite often small budgets, he gets amazing casts. In this one, the priest is Tom Berenger. The men helping the women are Trace Adkins and Jeff Fahey.
Wow.
The sheriff is Forey J. Smith, you probably all know from Yellowstone. The lead villain is the ever-scary James Russo. The overall villains, incidentally, are the Pinkertons.
Oh.
The women who are not big stars, but they're very good, do very well, are Victoria Pratt and Spencer Locke. And it's all shot in and around Old Tucson and looks fabulous. The Dead Man's Hand is also available for rent from Amazon Prime. And I have not seen the whole thing, but the trailer looks good. And what I have seen looks good. And it's based on a very popular graphic novel, or as I like to call them, a comic book of the same name. Not a criticism. It's just, you know, that's what it is. Anyhow, this one also has a strong cast. Cole Hauser from Yellowstone, Stephen Dorff as the villain of the piece, and the young lead is Val Kilmer's son, Jack Kilmer. And there's some other Yellowstone faces in this one, including Mo Brings Plenty and, again, Foree J. Smith. So my personal big news is that 1 month and 2 days from today, my first book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made, and the People Who Made Them, will be published by Two Dot and immediately be available from out west.
Yeah, we're excited. And you'll be our featured guest on February 8th. You'll be with us, as always, the first Thursday of the month, and then you'll be back as the featured guest. And we think that's going to be great fun.
I'm very excited about that because, you know, I like to talk about myself.
Could you tell us, take a minute and talk about the book?
Yeah.
Sure, I'd love to. It's about 80 articles. It's based on all my work for True West for the past coming up on 10 years now. And it's about 80 of my articles. One of the nice things about it was that, as you know, when you write for a magazine, you always have limitations based on space. And because, you know, it's got to be 800 words or 1,200 words or something very specific. So you always end up cutting out good stuff that just because it didn't fit in. So one of the nice things I was able to do was go back in and put back the good stuff that had to be cut for space. So even if you have the pleasure of reading all my articles already in the magazine, you'd still find a lot of stuff in there that you hadn't read before. So
very good. That's good.
That's great. We're very excited. We're very excited. We always get excited when a new book launches, right, Mike?
You betcha.
There's nothing like a new book launch.
Holding that book in your hands for the first time, opening that box is just a special treat every time.
Yeah. And that's a perfect segue. You want to go ahead and talk a little bit about, so we were just talking with Henry, True West Magazine, editor of Western Films, and Henry stays on with us. We're very excited always to have him with us for the whole show. Thanks. And next we're going to kind of talk a little bit about Mike.
We are.
Yeah.
Now, I have a little intro. Should I read
that? Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about Mike here. Mike Troiano is a multi-award-winning author of four traditional Western mysteries set in the Colorado and New Mexico territories. In the fifth grade, he read his first Zane Grey novel and has been hooked on the Old West ever since. All of his Westerns have been published by Wild Rose Press, with the most recent, White Sands Gold, winning 5 awards. His first historical novel, Fireflies at Dusk, was released on November 27th and has already won an award. Fireflies is a coming-of-age tale about a young man torn between his pacifist family and his urge to fight against slavery as the Civil War breaks out. His books can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookshop.org, just to name a few.
Welcome,
Mike.
Mike.
Great to be here. Goodness gracious.
Just love this cover. Don't you just love that cover?
Yes, my publisher put that together. And, you know, we kind of collaborated on the scene and the mood. We've got the fireflies there, and then we've got an antique lamp there that gives you an idea that it's not a contemporary, but it's an older story. So yeah, I really like it. And I've gotten so many comments on that cover, but it's quite a bit different than my Western covers. That's for sure.
Well, you know, I went looking for my copy of White Sands Gold. I had pulled it out, and I don't know where I put it. Mike, will you just hold up that book? Because we did talk, Mike, with Mike about a year ago when this book came out, and it's wonderful. You want to take a moment and just tell our audience a little bit about White Sands Gold before we get into Fireflies?
Sure. White Sands has been very gratified. It's won 5 literary awards so far. Came out a little more than a year ago. And it's a result of a conversation with a friend of mine who's been mining the area north of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and told me about the legend of fabulous treasure of gold bars supposedly stashed under a mountain north of Las Cruces called Victorio Peak. And so, you know, I was a little skeptical. I'm going, sure, Ken. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Yeah. I'm going. So I go home and I put in, I Google White Sands Gold. And boom, all this stuff comes up. And I go, whoa, I'd never heard of that. And so that got me interested in the storyline of all these gold bars stashed, and nobody knows who put them there or when they put them there. But it's, I guess, in antiquity is the answer there. So I got involved in writing about the treasure and those who were guarding it and the bad guys who were trying to get it, and weaving a story around all that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And it was a fun read. It was a very engaging read. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to ask a question?
Why don't we go back a little bit? When did a little bit about yourself, and then when did you start writing?
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in Ohio, and as you mentioned, Jim, in 5th grade, I read my first Zane Grey, and that was it for me. And then I read all that I could of him, and then subsequent writers, Louis L'Amour and Elmore Leonard and so forth, classics, and Owen Wister, of course. Mm-hmm. But then life got in the way, career and all the things that go along with it. So I didn't do any serious writing, although I taught college English, college journalism, and I'm a pretty darn good editor. I've worked with magazines and newspapers, but I didn't do any serious writing until I retired. And I told my wife, I said, I think I'm going to try and write a book. And she just kind of...
as spouses do.
Uh-huh. Yes. And then when I'd written the first one, I said to her, I said, I didn't know if I could do that. And she said, I didn't know if you could either. And I said, well, I'm glad you didn't tell me that beforehand. When I started retirement, I started seriously writing.
So tell us, and then I think you're going to read a passage from Fireflies at Dusk. Do you want to tell us a little something about the book? And then you're going to read a passage. We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to come back and talk in detail about Fireflies at Dusk.
Fireflies is my first historical, and it's a coming-of-age story about a young man growing up in a pacifist family who experiences runaway slaves being taken away from his Quaker meeting house and no one moving to stop them. And so he's so distraught. He turns his back on the family's pacifism. He starts a lifelong headbutting with his father, who hadn't done anything. And then our hero, Jonathan, grows up, goes to college, and really, when the Civil War breaks out, his separation from the family, his faith, his sweetheart is complete because he joins the Union Army when the war breaks out. And he reaches a point where he's pushed everyone who ever loved him and anyone he loved far away. And so he's all alone. And now he's in furious combat, leading men who would just as soon see him dead. And now will he undertake what promises to be a gritty journey to reclaim his self-respect, his family, his faith, his sweetheart? Well, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good story, if I do say so myself.
It is. Let me ask again. What was there a particular inspiration for the story and for the book?
Well, it was interesting. I started writing about McClellan, George McClellan, general, mm-hmm. who Civil War general, who enjoyed the loyalty and respect and admiration of his men to an extent that no other Civil War general right. did, even Robert E. Lee. And he's always kind of fascinated me as a result of that. And so I thought I'd be writing a story about George McClellan. But then I said, well, you have to have a character mm-hmm. to see McClellan yeah. through this character's eyes. And so I created Jonathan and I started growing him up. Yeah. And as I went along, Jonathan just took the story over and pushed McClellan into the background, which was yeah. for me as a newer writer at that point was incredibly interesting. How the characters took over the story, regardless of what my intent might have been originally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you want to read? Is this a good time to go ahead and read a passage?
Sure, sure.
Wonderful.
So the hero is Jonathan. His childhood sweetheart is Barbara. And he hadn't seen her for several years. He's been off to college and she didn't go. So they're sitting at a picnic table, spring picnic table, and nighttime is falling and the fireflies are starting to rise from the grass. So here it is. Jonathan did indeed remember Barbara. He carried a picture of her in his head from when they were about 12. She was walking toward him outside school, carrying some books. Her dark reddish hair trailed over a light blue top. No more pigtails. The scene was still as vivid today as if it had just happened. As she turned from the punch bowl toward him now, his heart raced. Mrs. Carson called them over to the picnic table where she and Jonathan's mother were settled in. Barbara Elizabeth, why don't you and Jonathan come sit with us? When dusk crept across the landscape, fireflies appeared as if from nowhere, filling the air around their table. They were common this time of year, but to Jonathan, they seemed to be putting on a show just for them. His little brother, Peter, spun in the middle of the field, reaching for them. When one got caught in his curly hair, he looked like he had a blinking lantern perched on his head. His mother called Peter over to the table and made him stand extra still. She worked through his curls, laying them aside so the firefly could find its way out. Peter stared at it in Belinda's hands. Mama, it's not lighting up anymore. It won't, Peter, as long as I'm holding it. Fireflies only light when they're free. Belinda thrust her hand upward. The firefly blinked away into the faint evening light. Jonathan couldn't take his eyes away from Barbara's face as she followed the firefly, her head tilted slightly, a moment he would never forget.
Mm-hmm. And that was our author guest, Mike Troiano from Fireflies at Dusk. Such a vivid writer you are, Mike. I can just see that whole scene just lay out just so perfectly, which is the way you write this entire book. When we back, Mike is going to share more backstory and insights into Fireflies at Dusk. But first, here's a word about where you can find all of Mike's titles, as well as all of the books, including Henry Parks, of our Rendezvous with a Writer guests, our Out West Shop affiliate, Bookshop. We'll be right back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with special guests Henry Park and Mike Toriano. Okay. We are talking about Fireflies at Dusk at the moment.
Yeah.
Mike's new book.
Mike, will you just briefly tell us the years that span? Because we meet Jonathan Young and we follow him. Kind of what years are we looking at and what are some of the locations that this story takes place in?
Ballpark from 1848 to 1865, the end of the Civil War. And the book starts outside of Cincinnati, which was a location on the Underground Railroad. And the Quakers were very involved with helping the runaways move safely north. And so that's where the story opens up. And then it moves when Jonathan goes to college, he goes to Princeton. So we moved to Princeton, and then we go into the Civil War. And while the book is not about the war, the war acts as a historical background that allows me to develop Jonathan's character and reveal it more and more and more. And so we've got several very gritty battles, perhaps the most prominent one is Antietam, where some very heartfelt things happen to Jonathan there. And no spoiler alert for readers, but yeah, we have several locations there during the war. And then Jonathan gets captured, taken prisoner, to Andersonville in Georgia, which is the South's largest prison camp, an awful, awful place, as all the prison camps were, but this one was particularly gruesome. It was designed to hold perhaps up to 13,000 prisoners, and it held at one point 33,000 Union prisoners. And the death rate was incredible, not so much from the wounds that they might have had coming in, but the dysentery wiped people out, wiped these soldiers out every day. They would trundle in big wagons to haul folks away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to? What?
You know, we have we have a number of different subjects that you cover.
We have
in
so many
book. So it's kind of like, which ones we pick out, you know? you cover father and son relationships, and you have more than one. You have, obviously, Jonathan and his father, but we also have a fellow by the name of Parker and his father. Mm-hmm. And did you, question might be, did you draw on something from your past on relationships like this, or did you...
Did I model something on my own experience?
Maybe, or somebody else's you knew?
No, I didn't. I had a wonderful relationship with my father. Looked up to him incredibly. A great role model for a young boy to grow up. But I do think that the characters and their interactions that we write about come from our knowledge, whether it's our personal experience or whether we've experienced that through other people or through reading other books. And so Jonathan and his father have a very hard-headed relationship after Jonathan is so distraught when his father doesn't do anything to save his runaway boyfriend that he'd become friends with. And he, in his immaturity, he carries that anger through growing up, and it's not resolved until later in the book.
Yes, right.
And the story arc kind of comes full circle back to the pacifism theme that runs throughout the book. So, yeah, that was a very poignant relationship. And then Parker with his father was also an interesting way to reveal some more historical facts. And it's interesting because this is a historical, but you don't want the history to overwhelm the story. So you want the history to flesh out the story and add to the story and make it more robust and more dramatic. So yeah, those relationships were very important in the overall theme of the book.
You know, something kind of, you know, I thought about a lot as I read the book was letter writing. Mm-hmm. We forgot about, you know, that we can write letters these days instead of emails.
Yeah. Well, that was interesting because if you read a Civil War literature, letters are prominent in a lot of different books. And if you read those letters, I'm kind of amazed all the time with how literary they were.
Yeah.
These folks were well educated. They knew the English language, and their expressions were priceless compared to, you know, our Twitter or what have you today.
Emojis, yeah.
Emojis today, yeah.
Back to hieroglyphics, you know.
But so I kind of played off on that and used letters between Barbara and Jonathan in that same vein. And the letters allowed me to bring Barbara more to the fore because she was not necessarily in every scene. And so the letters allowed me to keep Barbara in the reader's mind and then develop her through the letters and what she was saying to Jonathan and a little bit of character development for him and how he was taking it and his letters back to her. So it was a wonderful literary device.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and it was also interesting because you even have the characters addressing the letters. And they might not have a whole lot of information to put on the envelope. And yet these letters seem to find their way, you know, whether it was to the hospital that we thought Barbara, you know, that maybe Barbara was working at, or I think he was even getting them in the prison, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah. So I, you know, of course, that may be partly the U.S. author allowing things to happen. So they worked out correctly for the storyline, but I just found the whole letter writing and delivery of and receiving of that whole piece is very, you know, very interesting.
Well, it was a little bit like pay. When you're on the march, where are you going to write a letter?
Yeah.
Where are you going to address it?
Yeah.
And so that simple envelope, Barbara Carson, Maurer Hospital, Philadelphia, that was all he knew.
Yeah.
Or all she knew. Jonathan Gray, Company C of Regiment 71st Ohio.
Yeah.
So eventually they did find each other, but it was necessarily months sometimes before letters would get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And there, I think in the writing of the letter, they, of course, would know it could be a long time before it might be received or I might hear back. But there's something in the writing of the letter that makes you, the letter writer, feel like you've had conversation or communication. You've put it out there, and there has to be even a sense of I've done, you know, this person's on my mind, and I've communicated, and you just then have hope that it's going to get where it needs to be in time for that person to also receive it. And it's just interesting because in these days, that's just so not what we, you know, it's just not what we do.
Well, that's an interesting point, Bobby Jean, because you put your finger on it. It was a way of hoping, mm-hmm. raising hope. Mm-hmm. I've sent the letter. I sure hope it gets there. It's something mm-hmm. to grab onto.
Yep.
In the midst of war, you know, maybe it'll get there. And maybe I'll get a letter back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, it also took their minds off of the dire circumstances right. that they were in.
Yeah. What kind of... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We got lots of questions.
We have lots of questions.
I want to give him a chance. Did yes. you have any question you want to ask to Mike?
Yes, I wanted to ask something actually a little more basic. Knowing that you've written both traditional Westerns and now this is your first historical novel, what exactly is the difference between, because to me, I think of a Western as historical. So I was wondering how you separate those genres.
Well, I guess I separated, Henry, on the basis of, first of all, geography. Mm-hmm. This is set primarily in the Eastern U.S., although Jonathan does fight with Sherman out in Vicksburg on the Mississippi, but it's primarily in the Eastern U.S. So, yeah, there's a blurring there, isn't there? There's not a complete line between Western and historical because the Westerns are historical
right?
as well. And what's interesting is, how many comments I've gotten about the history in Fireflies at Dusk, people remarking about the historical facts that the story contained. They didn't know this. They didn't know that. I didn't, you know, it was new to a lot of my readers who I anticipated would know more about the Civil War, more about the time period, the location, time and place, that kind of thing. But I got a lot of comments that, boy, this was interesting. I didn't know that. Or, golly, you know, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So from a historical standpoint, the same thing plays into the Westerns, though, doesn't it? Because my Westerns have a very definite historical background as well. Time and place out west, whether it's my Colorado Territory Westerns or my New Mexico Territory Westerns. The history back then was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I could just do a quick follow-up.
Yeah.
Do you think readers today care more about getting the history right than they used to?
I don't.
Good question.
You mean writers or readers?
No, I mean a reader. If it makes a bigger difference to a reader to have the history right than it used to.
There are some, Henry, that, boy, you better be spot on. Those historians, they're going to chew you up, spit you out if you don't have it right. So you're absolutely right. But I think most readers who aren't as familiar as a historian is, they're hopefully going to enjoy the storyline and the history sure. that you do bring to it. But you're right. Yeah, you definitely need to be authentic in what you're saying and how you're saying it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mike, we're going to take another break in a moment, but first I want to segue back. You're talking about your readers. What kind of other responses have you had from readers about this book, this story?
Well, they've been so gracious in their reviews on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads. I've had one reader tell me this is the best historical fiction I've ever read. That's a quote. I've got some other ones on my website that I've posted snippets of, and it says a brilliant and deeply moving literary gem. Mm-hmm.
Like, deeply moving. I would think deeply moving would be something a lot of us might say about this story.
Exactly.
Another one says a tapestry rich with history. Uh-huh. Okay. And then finally, your best book yet.
Ah.
Anyway, but I've been very, very flattered with the feedback.
All right. We're going to take one more short break. This is for our sponsor, OutWestShop.com. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Mike and Henry. Stay tuned.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with special guests Henry Park and Mike Toriano. And we're discussing at the moment Fireflies at Dusk.
Do you want to?
We want to we'll talk about a couple characters, if it's okay, Mike.
Sure.
You know, you got some good characters in here.
Oh, yeah.
But this one, we kind of want to talk about a minute. First Sergeant Rupert Owens.
Oh, we love him. Oh, my gosh. What a guy.
Yeah. I love him, too. He's based on a senior NCO that I had in one of my offices at one of my stations. And Rupert brings an irreverence. He brings a lightheartedness to the furious combat that these men are involved in. And I've always believed that when you got such drama as war and the battles and soldiers dying and all the awful things that are happening, that you've got to let the reader up every now and then, up off the floor.
Yes.
And Rupert served that purpose, I think, very well, because he was so irreverent. He was bigger than life personality, and I've had so many of my readers tell me that he's their favorite character. But he was a delight, and I delighted in him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we get to overhear him talking with one of his men about a slacker. And we found that so interesting. Tell us the term slacker and how it's used in your story.
Rupert, the first sergeant, calls his men, his soldiers, slackers. If they have proven themselves, if and only if they have proven themselves, it's a term of honor.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be called a slacker by the first sergeant was a very coveted title. And so not everybody was a slacker. And there's a scene there where somebody is explaining to a new recruit, a greenhorn, a boot, what a slacker is. And a slacker is those who get things done without being told, those who are at the front of the line when they form up, and those who show leadership during the intense tensions of battle. And so a slacker came to be a term of honor when Rupert Owens would call you a slacker.
Mm-hmm. Which is sort of the opposite of what, you know, for some reason, the opposite of what I think most of us think of. And that's one reason it was so interesting to me Yeah, he's quite he is. He's bigger than life. He's quite a guy.
You know, he kind of shows the importance of a non-commissioned officer, particularly in battle. Yeah, a lot of these officers, the younger officers, are not really very experienced. And you got a fellow here that not only is experienced, but he has command of his men. It's like if these non-commissioned guys aren't there somewhere in the middle, there's no...
Well,
there's going to be a problem between the officer and the guys because they're regular soldiers, because they don't know each other, and it's a matter of respect. And
well, and he took more action than McClellan.
Yeah, and the NCOs are the backbone of any military organization. And Jonathan, who was not experienced when he initially came to this position in the company, Jonathan was smart enough to let Owens have his way and to in effect, act as a company commander until Jonathan gained more experience. So, the NCOs were a make or break for any military organization.
Mm-hmm. As a reader, I want to say that this was a highly enjoyable book, and you couldn't imagine exactly how it would go. I liked Jonathan in the beginning, and then I did not like him at all. I wanted to shake him. I wanted to sit him down. I wanted to lecture to him. And I didn't really know how, like we all don't know how a story will go or how characters will go. But you, as the author, you really take us through quite an adventure of a story. And we see characters develop. And, of course, we lose some characters. That's life and that's war. But it's not done in any kind of way without love. I think you really love all of the characters that you write about. Jonathan, how did you meet Jonathan? How did he come to your attention?
Interesting. I think some of him was patterned after me. And some of him was an amalgam of other friends of mine or people that I knew in my childhood. I mean, we've all had people in our lives who are on, you know, the good side and not so good side. And so one of the things I try to do with all my characters is give them depth, give the heroes or heroines flaws so they're not perfect, and give the bad guys or bad gals positive characteristics as well so they're not entirely bad, because then that's just no depth. That's one-dimensional, and it's not interesting because nobody's perfect and nobody wants to read about perfect people.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you said earlier that the characters kind of took over at some point, I would imagine, does that mean you are more of a pantser than an outliner, or what would you say?
Oh, my gosh. If you look in the dictionary under seat of the pants writer, you're going to find my picture.
Mike Toriano.
Yeah, I am the worst pantser around. There are times when I wish I was a plotter and had everything neatly plotted out in advance. You know, act one, act two, act three, and this character does this and so forth, says that. I just write. And when I get to the end of the first draft and I look back on it, my first drafts are horrible. And that's okay, because I've got a great critique group. I've got great beta readers. I'm a very good editor myself, and I've got my publisher, my editor. And so we can whip the things that I put together. We can whip them into shape there. But it's not, I don't think, the preferred method that I would recommend for new writers or younger writers. There are many times I wish I was a plotter, but the pantser seems to work for me.
When do you write? When do you find time to write?
Boy, I wish you hadn't asked me that. I am not just a pantser, but I'm an undisciplined pantser. Yeah, which I think is the worst of both worlds. So I don't have a set time. I don't have an organized approach. I sit down, Jim, when I get a few minutes.
Okay. All right.
And I'll nibble at the story. Again, that's not, I don't believe that's a preferred method. but it seems to work for me, but I'd not necessarily recommend it for folks coming
out. Right, particularly.
Henry, do you have a question for Mike?
Well, yes. I was wondering, when your approach is not the sort of at the desk at 8 o'clock and you have to write so many words per day and things like that, that you, as you say, do it by the seat of your pants. How long does it take you to write a book? Does it vary greatly?
Yes. I've had books take 2 years from start to publication. I've had a book to take just a little over a year from start to publication. And so it varies quite a bit. This last book, Fireflies, I actually started in 2013. Oh. And when I had the first draft done, I shot it out to agents and editors. And of course, I got no response, or I got a response, it was just a stock letter. And I got one response from an editor who gave me chapter and verse of why I wasn't ready. And I was so impressed. Here I am, a young writer, and she's taken the time to given me on point of view, on dialogue, on showing versus telling, on character development. She's taken her time. And so about 8 months after that, I sent her another email. You don't remember me, but you rejected my first one. I have a Western I'm working on now. Would anybody at Wild Rose be interested in seeing it? She said, I'm going to have this put on my headstone. She said, send it to me when it's ready.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I sent it, and that ended up my first contract. And I put Fireflies on the electronic shelf for years.
Okay.
And I didn't circle back to it until last fall, 22, when I said, it's time to really polish this thing up. And so that one, Henry, has taken me 8-9 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm looking at time, gentlemen. I can't believe it. We have like 3 minutes left. Mike, can you please tell our audience where they can find you, your web address, and all that good stuff?
Yes. MikeToriano.com. We'll flip over to WesternNovel.com website. And gosh, I'm on Amazon. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. And Bobby Jean has been nice enough to put me on Spotify and all these.
And you will be again.
I don't know anything about. So, yeah. But what's interesting to me is as a Western writer, I have pretty much focused on Facebook as my social media go-to because of the demographic of Facebook. But now, as a historical with the Fireflies, I've had to expand. I mean, I did a little Twitter, a little LinkedIn. I'm working those more, and I'm adding Instagram, and I'm adding all these other social media because of the demographics of the historicals.
Yeah. And Henry, where can people find you?
Me?
Yes.
Well, you can find me, of course, at Henry's Western Roundup at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com. You can email me at swansongmail. I have the longest email address in history. swansongmail@svcglobal.net.
And you can find him every month in True West Magazine, of course.
Right.
And we want to thank you, gentlemen. Oh, Jim, you have a quote you need to read. Oh, my gosh.
Do we have time?
Yes, quickly, quickly.
The pressure is on. We got two quotes here. And one is our main character, Jonathan, as a little boy. He says, "Why don't we fight, Mother?" His eyes brimmed. "Because we don't take sides against any person or any people. We want to keep ourselves focused on God so we can honor him." But the Johnson says, "But God wants us to do what's right, doesn't he?" And then as he grows up, Johnson as a Union officer, "The only reason I'll go back is for my men. I'm not even sure I know what we're fighting for anymore. But I'll go back for them. I wouldn't let them down for anything. I love my men almost as much as I love you," as he tells Lizzie his love.
Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us tonight. Next week, another author from Wild Rose Press, our good friend, Jen C. Brown. Her book launched officially yesterday. She will be with us next Thursday, A Right Fine Life. And we will be part of her launch party at Books on the Bosque this Saturday, if you're in the Albuquerque area, at 2 o'clock. We are very excited for her. And join us again this time next week. What else, Jim?
It's always a great day out west. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you next week.
Enjoyed being with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it was-